Welcome back to another episode of Milk Crate Confessions, a special edition of the Paddler's Playbook. Today, the guys answer questions like, does a rudder really make a difference? Is fishing affected by music? And do I need to worry about alligators on the water? So sit back, relax, and enjoy the paddle.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land. I'm your host, Drew Turner. I'm here with my co-host, Chris Lewis. This is another edition of the Paddler's Playbook. We're going to do another Milk Crate Confessions episode here. Me and Chris are going to go through some of your questions from Facebook, some of your questions from Instagram, some of your questions from the Saltwater Survival Series. You know, Chris, I was out at the Saltwater Survival Series. I guess it's whenever this airs, it'll be 2 weeks ago. And I got to meet a few of the listeners out there. It was really nice to see you guys, you know, talk about fishing, talk about the podcast. I've got tons of ideas for future podcasts. It's great that whenever you guys see me or if you see Chris, you come up and talk to us. And almost every time someone comes up and talks to us, they're like, hey, I got a good idea for the podcast. And every time they tell us one, it's a good idea. I mean, there's so much for us to cover. But it was great getting out there and seeing Rex. Rex was there with Action Hat. Our friend of the show, Rico, was there with Third Coast Pit Smoke, selling some barbecue. So it was a fun weekend being out there, you know, talking to some of the guys, mixing it up with the listeners. I had a good time at Saltwater Survival Series. Shout out to Daniel and Tony and everybody involved with that tournament. They had a good crowd out there. It was fun to be out there. Did you get into anything fun and exciting over the past few weekends?
Yeah, I wanted to comment real quick on the Saltwater Survival Series. Those of you that don't know, this is a series that has been a part of the Texas Gulf Coast in the Galveston area for quite a few years. The first part was just this last few weekends ago, and the first part's always a redfish tournament. Now, I believe there are side pots for trout and for flounder and things like that. But then throughout the year, the tournaments change. And that's what's kind of cool about it, is that they're not just redfish tournaments. Later on, they'll have a trout tournament, and maybe your side pot then is redfish. And then later throughout the year, you might have a flounder tournament. So it's sort of a variety that touches on a lot of different fishing styles, species. But of course, it is a kayak-only tournament. The guys that are running it right now, I mean, they have been noted as being extremely professional, and they run a really great event. So, and if you're sort of on the fence of whether or not you want to try a tournament out, this is probably one of those events that is really easy to cut your teeth on. Okay, you're going to meet a lot of really neat people, and you're going to have a good time. As far as that weekend goes, yeah, Drew, we were way, way, way far away. The missus and I, you know, we've had our new skiff for a few weeks now and taken it out a handful of times, and we're trying to get used to it. So we decided to spend some time with some friends of ours on their property in Gilchrist, where we both had our boats out and we were just kind of running around like we were in go-karts. definitely an experience. So, yeah, we brought all of our toys out on the water and just played for the day. So it's summertime, baby. You know, and I'm glad to see that tournaments are opening back up. I'm glad to see that people are getting back outside. It's a great time of the year to really start doing a lot of these things. And Texas is open, baby. Texas is open back up for business. Everything is rocking and rolling. We're moving around. We're buying and selling. And life is starting to look better. You know, it's starting to look good.
Yeah, man. It was nice to get out there and talk to them. And then me and Jessica, we got to go do some fishing on Sunday. On Sunday we ended up going. We ended up waking up early and heading out there. We went to Matagorda. We did some fishing down there. We had some luck. We caught some redfish. Jessica caught a nice trout. She's just getting into really throwing a popping cork, so we threw popping corks almost all day. Well, she threw popping corks all day. If anybody finds a Four Horsemen popping cork, uh-oh, still connected to a nice 20 to 23 inch redfish, can you please return that to me and Jessica? We lost that one. We saw it swimming away. It was a heartbreaker. And the bad thing is we figured out the pattern. We found the fish. I only had two popping corks, and one was on my pole and one was on her pole. I cleaned up all my tackle storage. I cleaned out my crate. So I have about 10 of them in the tackle closet in the garage, and I had zero in the crate whenever we went fishing.
I always have an extra with me, man.
Man, I do too, but like I said, I completely cleaned out the black pack. I took all the empty cans off, all the rusted cans of sunscreen. I took all that stuff out.
The shit that's been piling up from
there
from
was three or four
year.
Jig heads. Yeah, there was three or four jig heads. I cleaned it all out. I cleaned out my tackle closet. I mean, I cleaned up my corks and cut off all the old leader material and stuff, and I put everything nice and neatly in a bag, you know, in the tackle closet, and so, I did not load up any more popping corks.
Listeners, there are two type of fishermen in this world, and Drew and I happen to be one type, and you know, I know quite a few people that are the other type, and the type that Drew and I tend to lean towards is the type that just throw all of our stuff when we're done fishing into our crate, and we kind of forget about it until the next time we go out fishing. And then, of course, then it gets cleaned up. Now, of course, taking care of your reels might be a different story, but I know some folks that as soon as they're done fishing for the day, everything gets clipped off, spools come off of their reels, spools get rinsed separately from their reels, lures are tidied, you know, jig heads are rinsed and cleaned if they're going to be used again. Man, they are meticulous. And I feel you whenever you're talking about pulling those rusted cans of bug spray and sunscreen out of your storage. So, hey, you know something we found out this weekend? Spray-on sunscreen is not recommended for any type of use near fiberglass boats. And we got home after Saturday, and my boat was orange. And we were like, why in the hell is the boat orange? What did we get into? Well, come to find out, there's a product inside of that spray sunscreen that oxidizes with salt water and turns to just pure rust.
Oh, and wow.
So I start reading about it because, of course, Michelle is freaking out. She's like, why in the hell is my boat orange? And so now we've got to spend the big bucks on sunscreen that does not have this one particular chemical in it. And good thing that we listened to the Bite Me podcast, because the Bite Me podcast has talked about it numerous times. It's a sunscreen called Sol. And Sol is a zinc-based natural sunscreen. And we're going to end up trying that one out. That's just like $20 for 3 ounces, though.
$20 for 3 ounces. That is a nice chunk of change for some sunscreen. I don't know if ACK will have that, but I can tell you what ACK will have. They're taking orders right now, and they're shipping out some of the new Old Towns. You know, Old Town is really kind of taking over the game right now. They're putting out a lot of new products. Our May giveaway from the Paddler's Playbook is an Old Town Lure Angler Life Jacket. You know, they're really putting some nice stuff out there. If you guys check out ACK.com, like I said, they're shipping out some of the Old Town Sportsmen. You got the Old Town Sportsman Autopilot 136 powered by Minn Kota. You have the 120 powered by Minn Kota with the Autopilot. And then you have the 106 powered by Minn Kota. You know, these things are awesome. Chris, have you seen any of the demos with this Autopilot setup that they have?
I have, and I'll tell you what, you know, it was inevitable. Many years ago, we started seeing kayaks start to take shape from just standard paddling vessels that you can fish out of into fishing vessels that you can also paddle. That's kind of what these have become, are fishing vessels. The Autopilot actually includes Spot Lock with the Minn Kota technology with Spot Lock. And it's pretty dang amazing that you can get out there on the water and sync that sucker up with all your electronics and fish like you are out of a bass boat. I'm pretty crazy about what I'm seeing coming out of Old Town. And I said it a couple times now, but I think my next boat's going to be an Old Town boat.
They're really nice, man. And, you know, If you're looking for an Old Town, if you're looking for a Hobie, if you're looking for a Native, check out our partners over at ACK. Check them out at ACK.com. I know some of the stores will be opening soon. Did you see their new store that they have going up? Is it in San Marcos or New Braunfels?
I'll tell you what, San Marcos is...
Man, is it's a got lucky, a bar. I'm yeah, so...
They are a lucky, lucky, lucky town to have, you know, on-the-water demos daily. They are on the water now. The store is huge. It's immaculate. It's beautiful. They've really outdone themselves with this new location.
And they have a bar. There's a bar at the location. There is food right there at the location, and there is kayaks. Guys, if you listen to the Paddler's Playbook, you're probably a certain type of individual that will highly enjoy all three of those things. Food, right. A bar, and kayaks. I would hope what, that the bro staff would enjoy that atmosphere.
It sounds like the new gym I just joined. when they were giving us the tour, they brought us out to the resort-style pool. And they said, and just from your app, you'll be able to order your meal and your adult beverages to your cabana. I was like, holy crap. I thought I was joining a gym, not a country club.
Oh, wow. And you're highfalutin over there. They don't have those in the row.
That's twice now that somebody has compared it to highfalutin. It's not highfalutin.
You're highfalutin.
But it's fun.
Well, let's get into some of these questions. Like I said, I got to talk to some people at the tournament this weekend. I saw Vincent Vo down there, got to talk to him a little bit. And then another one of our listeners, I talked to him at the fishing show, Bill Padilla. He's a real good guy. He actually won one of the raffles down there. But whenever I was talking to him, he said, you know, on the podcast, you think you guys can talk about, does music really affect the fishing? If you have a little Bluetooth speaker on your kayak, is that really going to hinder your fishing? Is it going to, you know, enhance the fishing either? Is it going to scare the fish away? It's basically what he wanted to talk about. And I think this all stems from the photos we've all seen on Facebook of the tower speakers and the things you would see on a wakeboarding boat that they put on that Hobie. Chris, did you see the pictures of those huge speakers and the lights and everything on the PA?
It looked more like a battleship.
It did. It did. It had a lot on there. But hey, more power to them. If that's their thing, that's their thing. And I take a Bluetooth speaker with me on the kayak, and I know you have a Bluetooth speaker because I've been fishing with you with it before. And I think our take is going to be pretty similar on this. If you're just kind of posted up, you know, you pull up to an island and, you know, you may be soaking some bait or, you know, you're chunking a popping cork way out there. I don't see a problem at all with playing music. I don't think that you're scaring any fish. Now, if you're in a bay boat and you're really thumping and it's reverberating through the water and things like that. And man, I sounded like a really old white man whenever I just said you're really thumping. But if you really have the bass going and you have some reverberation going through the water, then that can probably affect the fishing. But I really don't think a Bluetooth speaker on the kayak while you're, you know, in fairly deep water is going to cause that much issues, as long as you don't have it up too loud and you're not causing any reverberations through your kayak. What do you think?
So there are a couple different schools of thought out there, and one is that sound will affect your fishing, and then there's of course the other that says it's not so much the sound that affects the fishing, but pressure waves. Any change in pressure will cause more notice to the fish below that you're there. Now, we're talking about shallow water. Okay, we're talking about shallow water fishing. So we're typically in 3 foot or less in most cases. Sometimes it may get a little bit deeper in some of these areas, but kayakers along the Gulf Coast tend to fish in shallow bodies of water. And then we have our offshore kayakers. And offshore fishing, jam out, dude. Jam out as loud as you want. A lot of guys that have been offshore with me, they know I'm bringing my big speakers, man. I'm jamming out the whole time. I'm powered up and I'm rocking it. Inshore, then you also have, I got to touch on this. Okay. You're going to have purists. Okay. People that want to enjoy nature because it's nature and they don't want technology to interrupt or get in between what they're trying to enjoy. And you'll hear people or see people comment on, ew, why did you bring that disgusting thing out here to taint my experience? Well, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry if my speaker bothers you, but this is a part of the experience that I enjoy. And everyone's different. We're all individuals. The best thing to do is to distance yourself from that person that's upset with your music. Okay, go ahead and find some other place to fish. Be the bigger person. Don't cause any problems. Do not ever, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart and very seriously, do not ever use earbuds when you're out on a kayak. Don't use earbuds when you're running a trail. Don't use earbuds when you're hiking. Don't use earbuds when you're mountain biking. Don't do it. Okay, you need to be able to hear surrounding noises. You need to be able to hear if there's a boat coming. You need to be able to hear if there's someone in distress. And earbuds will hinder that ability. So keeping a small Bluetooth speaker, if that enhances your experience, do it, man. Are fish bothered by it? I do not believe at all that fish are bothered by it. There are days where we experience very spooky fish, right? And so what do we try to do whenever we experience spooky fish? We try to do everything slow. We try to do everything slow and everything quiet, and we're trying to sneak up on them. And then it's like, oh, shit, that didn't work. They're going to be spooky no matter what, because you're just, there's nothing that you're going to be able to do to change that. Go find some other fish. Move spots. And go find some other fish, that maybe are a little bit deeper in water that aren't going to be affected by pressure waves. I'm telling you, I believe that it's the pressure waves that affect the fish more than the actual sound that's being created. That's my take.
Yeah, well, and I agree with you. And I think that you're going to irritate more people than fish if your music is loud and obnoxious. I mean, like you were saying, if someone doesn't like your music, you kind of distance yourself from them. That goes the same the other way. If you want to have your music on loud, don't paddle right up on another group who doesn't have any music playing. You don't really know them. They haven't invited you in. You know, they may enjoy just the serenity of everything going on.
Well, that's
and
sort
not
of a
want
no-no
to hear
anyway.
Your music.
That's sort of a no-no anyway. Don't paddle up on groups or singles even. When I first started kayaking, I did that once and I learned my lesson real quick. It was an older gentleman and he pretty much straight out told me that I was an asshole for what I did.
For paddling up on him?
Yeah.
Some guys don't want to be bothered.
Yeah, I thought it would just be cool to say hi and anchor down, you know, and fish with the guy and, you know, maybe get to know him because I'm that kind of person, right? I mean, I just want bullshit with you, man. Hey, you know what? I've got an extra beer. Let me pop one for you. But this guy was like, you know, you just ruined my experience and now I have to leave. So I do not roll up on anybody at all. I try to keep my distance. Unless I know that person, and then I'm probably just going to ruin your fishing experience just for the hell of it. I'm gonna roll up on you. I'm gonna be loud. I'm gonna be obnoxious. I'm gonna throw a beer at you instead of hand it to you. I'm kidding, of course.
Throw it in the water. It's funny you brought that up. You were just talking about kind of etiquette on the water. Something that I wanted to touch on real quick. And Chris, we didn't have this plan. This is just kind of coming off the cuff with this one. I saw a few videos the other day. And it was some kayakers, And you could see where the boat lane and the boat, the PVC was coming out of the ground, marking where the boat lane is. And these guys were really close to the boat lane. And I think they were probably fishing into the gut and then bringing it back. And they had a boat run through. And then they had another boat run through. And they're videoing it. And they're like, look at these a-holes. You know, what are they doing? Can't they see we're here fishing? If you're going to anchor up close to a boat lane where that's the only place those boats can go in that area, you have to expect boats to come through. If you're going to anchor up in the middle of a cut that's coming through, you have to expect that at some point somebody's going to have to paddle through there. You may have a boat come through there. Especially if you're in a marsh like back in Matagorda, which is, you know, there's a pretty popular marsh back there at 3 Mile. There's only a few ways in and out of that place.
Yeah.
And if you're going to anchor up in the main channel and you're going to fish that, you cannot get mad whenever another kayaker has to come through there. You know, use a little bit of sense, stay out of the boat lanes or expect a boat to come through the boat lane. Stay out of the, you know, anchoring up in the big inlets and outlets, or expect another kayaker to come through if you're in a popular place. Not everybody's being an asshole whenever they're coming through. They're just trying to get out of the marsh, or they're just trying to get to their spot.
You know, that's external stimulus that you have no control over, and you can't be mad about that. You had control from the very beginning. You had control by fishing somewhere else that's, you know, not in a boat lane. And I know of a lot of places like this, Drew, where people will park up on the sides of cuts and expect to fish that cut because, of course, water gets pushed through. It's a pinch point, right? It's gonna draw predators in because they know that bait fish are going to be flushed through that area. If that's where you want to fish, you have got to expect traffic to move in and out. It's going to happen. I've seen the videos.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
I mean, it's for sure. Now, I can see where some of the guys will get mad when the guys don't even slow down whenever they're coming through some of those. And, you know, they're almost flipping them over, or they're pulling up in boats close enough and they're fishing right beside the guys. I mean, like right up on him. You know, there's something to be said with that in etiquette as far as that is concerned. But I'm specifically talking about if you're fishing a boat lane, if you're fishing in between those two PVC pipes, you know, one on each side, you can clearly see that's a boat lane, or you can clearly see, you know, you're on the edge of the reef. These guys have to go around you a certain way, and that's where you happen to be fishing. You know, you have to take that in consideration. You have to be logical with it and know where you're fishing in the area you're fishing.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, let's get to some more questions. We talked about the music question just now. Another good question on here. We were talking about rudders in one of our episodes, and I don't think we've touched on it enough. But some of the newer kayakers out there, some guys that are experienced but just have never had a rudder on their kayak, does it make a huge difference on performance? And what type of conditions do you feel like the rudder really enhances your ability to fish? Because I know I have mine. What about you?
Well, you know, I like rudders on 12-foot boats and I like rudders on 16-foot boats. But each boat is going to have a different reason why I like the rudder on it. For one, a 12-foot boat could stand from or benefit from a rudder by helping it track a little bit better. Okay. A 12-foot boat tends to walk side to side.
Especially in some wind.
Yeah. And a rudder will help you to keep that boat straight. A 16-foot boat tracks very well. It does not walk side to side. However, getting that sucker to turn around sometimes might take an entire football field. Okay, a 16-foot boat, you can put a lot of lean into it if you feel comfortable in that kayak, and that will help you turn some. Okay, I've paddled many 16-foot boats without rudders, and I can lean into a turn almost as much as to where my hip is getting into the water almost. And that'll help me bank that turn a little bit more. But with a rudder, you won't need to do that at all. The number one reason why guys want to put rudders on their boats, though, besides being able to turn those 16-footers, is drift fishing.
Bingo. Okay? That's mine right there.
Yeah.
Whenever you're trying to drift the shoreline just right, yep, and you can get the wind blowing just right, and you can set that rudder correctly, you can drift that whole shoreline exactly the way you want to be facing almost the whole way, and all you have to do is adjust your feet a little bit. It's almost as good as, you know, that's when it's hands-free fishing, whenever you may not even have a pedal drive, as if you're drift fishing. I love it for drifting a shoreline.
I tell you what, it's not easy drift fishing in a pedal kayak, because your feet are used in a pedal kayak to propel the boat, and your hand is used to direct the boat. So whenever you're drift fishing in a pedal driven kayak, you have to take your hands away from the situation in order to adjust your direction. Whereas a non-pedal driven kayak, a paddling kayak, you make corrections with your feet, right? So you're almost in a, if you're drift fishing, you're almost in a much better predicament or better situation without the pedal system.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, that's my favorite thing about a rudder is the being able to drift and drift a whole shoreline, get set just right, just use your feet to go back and forth. And like you said, with paddling on those smaller, shorter kayaks, you're going to use less energy with your paddle strokes if you have a rudder, because it's going to track straighter. You're going to have to do less adjustment strokes. You know, you may have to do two on the left and then one on the right just to keep you straight on those windier days. And if you have the rudder, it's just a quick push of the left foot forward and move the right foot back a little bit, and you can continue to paddle as you normally would and keep a good cadence.
Here's something else that kills you with a pedal driven system. Let's say in a lot of waters that I like to fish become nearly impossible to use the pedal drive. Okay, so the pedal drive has to come out. When that happens, your rudder is useless as well, because of course you have to paddle the boat. You have to pick the rudder up. It's not going to do you any good. You have no controls at your feet. Your hands are being used to operate the paddle. So the rudder has to come up, and now you're forced to do corrective strokes constantly. And one thing that we found out with Hobie systems, okay, and this is something that's real, okay, it's a phenomenon. It's called the right hand turn phenomenon. Hobie kayaks, now they've gotten it right. I'm gonna tell you, in the Compass and in the new Outback, they've gotten it right. They fixed it. But in previous models, and the Revo still has this problem, and the Sport and some of the other ones, but when you're paddling, the boat wants to make a right-hand turn constantly. And it's something with the way that the hull is molded in order to perform with the drive system intact. It's not just Hobie, though. I've heard the same thing happens with the pedal drive system from Perception. What is that called?
I don't know. I'm going to have to look that one up.
It's a Wildy product, right? It's a Wildy product. Perception is Wildy.
It's Confluence, I believe.
Oh, Radar. The Radar.
Oh, the Radar. Okay. I thought you were talking about the actual pedal drive system. I was trying to look. I thought you meant like Propel or Mirage or something like that. Okay.
No, the boat itself, the Radar, I've heard also has the same exact issue. Pull the drive and you have to paddle. Now you're forced to contend with right-hand turns. But you know what? That's the price you pay in order to have that pedal drive system, guys. And I know that we're going to talk about that in another episode, the whole paddle versus pedal thing. Advantages, disadvantages, and I'll tell you what, that's why I have both. That's why I have both paddlers and peddlers and SUPs.
Because there's a situation. You got it all over there.
There's a situation for all of them.
Now, it's funny. You were talking about right-hand turn. I thought you were going to go somewhere else with it, with the Hobies and the right-hand turn. Because for me, whenever I have the PA out there, I pull my drive up, and then I get up to stand, and I start paddling around, and mine turns hard to the right every time. But that's because I've left that rudder turned all the way to the right whenever I stopped.
Yeah, you got to lift that thing up.
Yeah, and now my rudder's all sideways because I just don't remember to put it up, and I'm always going off to the side there.
You've got to realize Drew is not much of a pedal guy, and he never has been. He has had a couple of pedal drive kayaks. I think you had a Revo for a very short amount of time, like maybe 2 or 3 months. You had a Titan for like 2 or 3 months. You had a PA for like 2 or 3 months.
I had a Slayer Propel. That was the longest one I had. I liked the Slayer Propel the most. I think that was the best pedal drive kayak I had. And I think it's because it paddled really well. And I could stand up in it and it was comfortable. I have the PA in the garage, you know, but this past weekend, whenever we went to Matagorda, man, I took the Native. I took the Ultimate, and I felt better out of that Ultimate than I did fishing the weekend before when I was at another place in Matagorda with the PA. The only thing that was good about the PA there is the wind kicked up really, really, really bad, and I just hooked a rope to the back of the PA, and I hauled Jessica across that back lake.
Now,
it was blowing hard. It was white capping in 2 foot of water.
There is a valid reason right there why a man and a woman should have at least one pedal-driven kayak. when your lady doesn't want to paddle anymore or gets a little bit too rough, or the other way around. If the guy doesn't, if he's a little bit on the wimpy side, and mama can take control.
Bottom pedal him around.
Towing somebody does not add any additional effort. Did you notice that?
It didn't really at all. I mean, I didn't notice it because I was cussing out the wind at this point. Because it was white capping in 2 foot of water. It was pretty bad that day.
I tow Michelle all the time, and it never adds any additional effort. She's always like, aren't you going to get tired by, you know, having to pull extra weight? And I'm like, no. The only thing that causes additional effort is dragging fish. But dragging another kayak, once you get a cadence down where it's just constant torque and you've got that other kayak on glide, it's like it's not even there.
Yeah, it is. And we're talking about, you know, towing around Michelle and Jessica, who, you know, are soaking wet, you know, half of what I am. So hauling me around on there may put a little bit of strain. You may feel a little bit of burn in those legs if the kayak's really dug down. I don't think hauling around the women folk are going to put too much strain on us. But, you know, this kind of rolls right into the next thing that I wanted to talk about that I got a question about. Like I said, we went to Matagorda, fished a new spot the other day, and I had to send you a text. And I'm like, hey, looks like there might be some gators in this area. Are there any gators out here? And not because I was scared, and I'm not scared of the gators on the water, and we'll get into this in a second. But that's a question a lot of people have that aren't used to being out on the water and fishing and being around gators or seeing gators. Are the gators going to mess with you when you're in the kayak?
So I fish around alligators all the time. In fact, there's rarely a time that I go out and I don't see an alligator. Now, I told you in that particular spot that y'all went to that some gators had been seen the week prior, but I had not seen any gators out there. My experience is this, and this exactly. Juvenile gators are curious, okay? And they will come up, they'll come up straight up to your kayak, and you might have 3 or 4 of them. If you're in an area that has a lot of alligators, you might have 3 or 4 juvenile gators coming up to you. But they're not going to mess with you, okay? They're just going to get close enough to where they're like, hey, what is this? What's going on? Because they're curious. Adult alligators typically stay away. Now, when you want to be concerned is when they don't dip their head back down underneath the water. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you're coming into an area, I've been in areas where there is a gator in the canal that I have to go through. There's no way I can get to the next lake except for this passageway, and there's a gator right in front of me. The only thing I can do is go over it. If I'm getting closer and closer and closer, and that gator does not dip back down into the water, then that tells me that's an aggressive gator, and I need to watch myself a little bit closer. I probably need to cause a little bit of a disturbance in order to try and scare this guy away. Michelle and I were fishing an area in East Bay, and this place was packed with alligators. And whenever I mentioned four or five juvenile gators coming up to you, that's exactly what was happening to her all day long. And she didn't mind it at all. Okay. She's like, oh, look, they're cute. You know, mm-hmm. and they weren't bothering her. The larger gators were doing exactly like I told you. As soon as we got close to them, they would dip back down underneath the water and disappear. But there was one gator that anytime we came near it, it would hiss and it would not dip down underneath the water. And we found very near that gator some duck decoys. And those duck decoys had big old gator teeth marks in them, man. In fact, I took one home and I have it in my garage. We figure that gator right there is probably protecting an area, and we did not want to go back into that area if he was there. So that's the story on gators, guys. You don't have to be terrified of them. If you are, I'm sorry. Pack a pistol with you. But don't just go off popping caps into every gator that you see. In fact, it's illegal to do that.
Don't go.
I'm pretty sure if they're attacking you, don't go Scott Weiland on them, okay?
don't go popping caps in them. This time of year, too, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but May to June is when the hatchlings, I don't know if that's what they're called for alligators,
they're
but
just
the baby,
juvenile.
Yeah, the baby alligators that are just now hatching, May and June is when they hatch. So if you're coming up on an alligator and the nest, that alligator is going to defend that nest. And like you're saying, if they don't go underwater, there's a reason why they're protecting that area, and especially this time of year through May and June, a female is going to be protecting her eggs, and she's going to be protecting her nest. I have always been told the rule of thumb to follow is if you see an alligator, it does not go underwater, do not go between the alligator and the shoreline. Go the other way around if you can, because that alligator's hanging out, it's protecting that nest. And it will protect its nest if you get too close to those babies. And I don't know if you've ever heard baby alligators before and the noise they make. I'm not even going to attempt to recreate that. You guys can go Google that. But if you ever hear that noise, get the hell out of wherever you're fishing. Because the mama is going to be there soon and she's going to be pissed off and she's going to wonder what's going on right there. I've only heard it once the whole time I've been kayaking, and it was on the far north end of Lake Conroe, and I knew where this big gator was always at, and you have to pass through this passageway where the San Jacinto, you know, leads in, and you have to go that way. And I heard the noise, and I turned around, and I went the other way because I couldn't see the mama, and I did not want to see the mama. There's not a lot to be scared of.
So is it noise like a velociraptor?
No. It's not like it's almost like a, I don't even know how to explain it. It almost sounds to me like puppies when they're very first born and they're yelping a little bit, but Look it up. You'll be able to notice it. Once you listen to it on YouTube, you'll be able to hear it. But May and June, really be on the lookout for alligators because of the nesting and stuff. But, you know, after that, once it gets into August, September, October, the most a gator's going to do to you is usually scare the shit out of you because you don't see it anyway. And once you get close enough, it takes off and thrashes through the water and just scares the crap out of you.
I need to add something to the whole gator experience, people. Look, do not feed the freaking alligator, okay? Especially, now, if you're feeding the alligators, you're probably doing it in an area where people congregate. That's just going to keep that alligator hanging around in that area. Not only that, but it's going to become more comfortable with becoming aggressive. There's an area in Sabine. It's an overpass where kayakers launch. And that overpass just so happens to attract a lot of crabbers. The crabbers, for some reason, love to feed the alligators. They see an alligator and they're like, oh, I got to toss some chicken to it. Oh, I got to toss some, a Dorito to it. Then that alligator hangs out there all day long. Don't feed the alligators, people. Leave them alone.
Feed the fish and then take them home and feed your family. But don't feed the alligators. Let's get into our last question of the day. One of the questions we got that people really wanted to hear us talk about is they want to know our must-have accessories on the kayak. And I'm going to narrow this down a little bit, Chris, because I know there's more than three that are must-haves on the kayak for me. But I'm going to ask you, give me your top three must-haves. You can only have three accessories on your kayak. What are the three that you're going to choose to put on there?
First accessory always on every single boat is a trolley, anchor trolley. Okay, and I always put my anchor trolley. People ask the question, which side, right or left? And I know we've talked about this in previous podcasts. The best option is both. If you can afford both sides, you want to do both sides, because there are going to be instances and cases where you may want to anchor off to the right or off to the left. Just so happens, I do most of my fishing off the right side of my kayak. So my anchor trolley is always on the left-hand side. The second must-have accessory, and I've found this out through trial and error, many different products out there, and the one that works for me the best is the Black Pack. The Yak Attack Black Pack, that is a storage system for your tackle, for your accessories. When the sun comes up and I no longer need my headlamp, I just toss it inside my Black Pack. I usually got three or four Plano boxes in there and a couple bags of plastics. An extra popping cork is inside my Black Pack. My sunscreen, my bug spray, all the necessities for the day. I might even have a small first aid kit. That's another accessory that's very valuable. What do we all start out with? We all start out with milk crates. And I mean, hey, we're calling this episode is the Milk Crate Confessionals, right? Milk crates work well for a small amount of time, and then they tend to just be a catch-all for crap. The Black Pack is a little more useful because it does have ergonomic handles. It has areas for me to put tracks so that I can install my flag to my Black Pack. Camera boom, the Yak boom, the boomstick. Also have my Yak Attack boomstick attached to the Black Pack. Probably the only other crate that's out there that's similar is something like the H crate from Hobie, or Flambeau has a new one out now called the Tough Crate.
Yeah, we gave one of those away.
Yeah,
we gave one of those away. Let me jump in real quick on the Black Pack, because I just want to say that I fished for, I've been kayak fishing for well over 10 years now. I just got a black pack about 3 years ago. So 7 years of Milk Crate, different configurations on the Milk Crate. And if you're thinking about getting a black pack, but you're like, man, why am I going to spend $129 on a black pack? I mean, you can save a little bit of money by using TPP15 when ordering that black pack at ACK.com. But there are some creature comforts on that black pack. Like you were talking about, there's pre-drilled holes for rod holders. There are actually little cuts and, you know, cutaways on the top that your bungee cord fits in for it to stay in there. And you're not fighting with your bungee over top of your crate. You know, you're reaching back behind you. You guys can't see me right now, but you're reaching back behind you. You're trying to get a Plano box out, and you just keep hitting the damn bungee behind you, and you try it five or six different times, and then your cork gets caught on the bungee and everything else.
That probably doesn't happen
because it has the recesses.
It's probably the simplest, most effective hatch lid on a crate. It really is.
And it the functionality of the black pack is something that I didn't even think I needed until I had one. And then I'm like, oh, damn, this is awesome. Kind of like heated seats in my truck. Whenever I bought my truck, I didn't even know it had heated seats. But now whenever it's cold outside, I hit them heated seats. I'm like, oh, gosh, this is great.
How could I live without this?
How could I ever live without these heated seats? This is great. And it's the same thing with the black pack. You don't have to have a black pack, but it makes it a lot easier as far as getting your stuff out and mounting things and things of that nature.
So it falls into the category of, you know, and must have accessory, a crate, some sort of crate, to pack all your stuff up into and get out on the water and get off of the water easily, quickly. But the black pack is the one that I choose to use. Third accessory. Man, I don't really.
This is hard, man. Yeah, I don't. Like, that's, there's probably five that are must haves, but I wanted to narrow it down to three.
Guys, I have been through them all. Whenever I first got my kayak, my very first kayak, you know, I accessorized as much as I possibly could, and I DIY'd all sorts of stuff just so I can figure out what felt right, what didn't feel right. And now I got to the point to where I will fish a kayak for 6 months before I start making any changes to it, besides the anchor trolley. That goes on almost immediately. And typically I find out that I don't need much. Okay. Here we go. Accessory number three, something to keep your important things dry and safe. I have numerous dry bags, and depending on what I need to bring with me that day, I may grab a small dry bag or a large dry bag. And I also have some Plano dry boxes that I bring with me. Michelle prefers the dry boxes. They fit her phone really well. They fit her keys really well. They float. They're waterproof. So if you do happen to turtle, they're not going to sink. The dry bags also are not going to sink. In fact, they say not to use it as flotation, but in a pinch, you probably could. It's a must-have accessory. Keeping your phone, keys, wallet, things like that dry and safe, a dry bag or a dry box.
Yeah, I agree with all those things. I'm gonna throw this out there. Whenever we're talking about must-have accessories, you know, straight off the bat, we're not talking about a life jacket. That's something you should have. We're not talking about something, you know, an anchor. That's something that you have to have on the kayak. But for me, I'm with you, anchor trolley. And I put my anchor trolley on the right side because I like to fish off the left side all the time. I have an anchor trolley on both sides of the native. 95% of the time I'm anchored up on the right side and I'm fishing off the left. I would say, just to be a little different than you with your answers, I love the black pack answer. But I'm going to say, for me, I think some kind of paddle holder, some kind of paddle clip. If you don't have one on the kayak, a lot of them already come with the bungees. The bungees are great, and I would suggest putting one on each side. For me, on my left side, I keep my stakeout stick, and on my right side, I keep my paddle, because I don't want to be fooling with 10 or 12 different things while I'm out there on the water. And I want everything to have a place, and I want it to be there, and I want to be able to grab a hold of it and it be where I left it. I don't want a paddle sitting in my lap when I'm trying to cast, or I catch a fish. So now I have a paddle in my lap. I'm trying to get the net. I have my rod in my other hand, and I'm trying to get a fish in the boat. And there's
could
just
it be
stuff.
A disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and there's stuff everywhere. So my fishing style, I like to pull up to a place. We were talking about this earlier before we started recording. I like to pull up on islands and pull up on points and then fan cast the shoreline to the right, fan cast the shoreline to the left. Or I like to back into a shoreline and fish coves that way. So I do a lot of my fishing just sitting in an area, but I'm on the shoreline. So I like to have everything segregated out in where it needs to be. Now, my last one, I'm just going to say a rod holder. I need some type of rod holder in the front. I need something to set my pole down in whenever I'm paddling, because I'm doing a lot of paddling. And I don't want to put it down in the bottom of the kayak, because I don't want it to get spray all over it. I don't want it to get salt water all over it. I don't want to drop my Gatorade on it. I don't want it sitting in the bottom of my kayak very much. So I'm going to have some type of rod holder in the front. We've talked about this before. If I could morph the Yak Attack base and the Rail Blazer actual rod holder section, I would want those two to have a love child. And I love the base, and I love the maneuverability of the Yak Attack rod holder and the system on it, but it's just a little too big for a lot of the reels, and there's a lot of play back and forth. The Rail Blazer rods are built a little smaller, and the rods fit in there a little bit more snug. But I think a rod holder, a paddle holder, and then the anchor trolley, those would be the three that I put on a kayak first, and those would be my top priorities.
So in my garage, I've got two Orcas rod holders. You know which ones those are, right?
The big ones. Yeah.
I've got probably four Scotties, different styles of Scotties. I just gave away all my Railblazer. So I had like two Railblazer rod holders and starports. I've got some stuff from Canon, which is old school. I've got all these rod holders, man. Tons of them. Crates full of rod holders and mounts. And I don't know why, because I don't like them. I've found out very early on that they just bother me. They're just one more thing that's in my way. And Michelle likes them. She likes to have one right there in her lap, kind of like you do, you know, so that she can put a rod down right in front of her. I will fish all day long with two rods in my lap and one in my hand. It's just my style, the way I do it. I do know why I have them. Okay, guys, I wanted to fish offshore more often. I wanted to fish offshore and be that guy that's always out there on an offshore window, catching some kings, catching some spades, catching some triggers, bringing home some really solid meat. I found out that my work life does not allow that to happen. So I never get to hit those offshore windows. And rod holders, and this is where accessories become more applicable to the game that you're playing. And if it's an offshore game, rod holders are going to be super important. Good, tough, solid rod holders. I was out with Scott one time and found out that, man, gear tracks, rod holders on gear tracks are not good for trolling at all. They spin, they come loose. You know, you want a solid, freaking hard mounted rod holder. That's why I love those Scotties, man. Scotties, you lock them in place, they are not going anywhere. They're compression fitted. They're not going.
Have you used the new Yak Attack ones? Their new system?
Not yet.
I'll show those to you next time that we go. They would be great for offshore because they're not going to spin.
I'm going to buy some, and I'll tell you what I'm going to put them on. Is I'm putting them on the my live board. My L4 Expedition has something 400 yards of gear tracks on the damn board. I'm exaggerating, of course. You can't poke any holes in the board to put any rod holders. And I have some old school Yak Attack Zooka tubes from, like, I don't know, 2015, maybe even before that, like whenever they first came out. And the new system that they have, that Luther has on those rod holders, it's pretty amazing, dude. They lock in and they lock in tight. And they will spin if you want them to spin. They'll turn around if you want them to turn around. But you have to engage that system. So, yeah, I've seen them. I just haven't used them yet.
Once you lock in the top, it's not going to spin. It's not going to go anywhere. And the actual base that you screw in, you actually screw it in from the top. You know how the more traditional ones, you slide it in the tracks, and then you screw it down, and it sits on there. But it has another piece. I mean, this isn't great for the podcast. I mean, you guys go check them out online. But it has another piece that fits in the groove that's a plastic piece, and then you turn the top and you crank it down. They're not going anywhere. Like I said, I love the Railblaza actual cradle, but I love the mounting system on the Yak Attacks. I'm going to keep going with the Yak Attack ones for now. But, man, we've run out of questions so far. We've been on here, you know, a good hour answering questions from Facebook, from you guys meeting you at the Saltwater Survival Series and different functions. I'm sure we're going to see you guys out and about. Please don't be shy. If you see me or Chris, come up and talk to us. We want to talk to you guys. We want to meet some of the listeners of the show. We want to get your show ideas. Come up and talk to us if you see us out and about. I know, Chris, you got any tournaments coming up that you're going to be fishing?
So GRS, that's the Galveston Redfish Series. It's no secret. First portion of the series this year, we blanked. And that was a hard one to take on the nose, man. So we're going back with a vengeance. It's going to be June 13th. We're going for a paycheck, man. We're going for the big paycheck. So hopefully we'll get it done. I'll be pre-fishing this weekend and the next weekend. Try and get on fish and stay on fish. So that's my plan, sir.
Maybe you can talk to friend of the show, Ben Maldonado. He got third in Saltwater Survival Series there. I saw him. I talked to him and Abel. They both put a whooping on some fish for that. Guys, get out and enjoy the water. The wind, I think, is starting to die down. It's been a very windy March, April, and May. Hopefully it's starting to die down a little bit. We've had all these storms roll through, but, you know, be weather aware. Check all that stuff out. But I hope everybody gets out on the water. I hope to see some listeners. There's going to be some events that start popping up. We're starting to get back to normal here in Texas, and the Paddler's Playbook, we're so excited to be able to get out and do some stuff that we had planned for months ago. I can't wait for ACK to start having their demos. That's going to be fun to go hang out with you guys. But again, if you see me or Chris out there, come talk to us. Get involved on the Facebook page. We got a lot of great submissions for the Life Jacket Challenge. That was pretty cool. We're going to have voting on that coming up. Registration for that. I say registration like we're doing something crazy. Yeah. We're gonna cut off submissions for that. So hopefully you've got your picture in. We're going to post up the pictures on the Facebook page, and we're going to give it a week of voting. You guys, there, if you haven't been over to the Paddler's Playbook Facebook page and checked out some of these pictures, there are some great ones. I will tell you, There are actually more than I expected of grown men without pants on. if you want to go check that out, there's more than one submission of pantsless men in life jackets, if that's your thing, gentlemen or ladies. If that's what you want to go look at, we have those over there. But we also had some great submissions of kids wearing their life jackets. We had submissions of, you know, families out there wearing their life jackets. We had some really good ones, and I'm really happy with our listeners and our participation on this. So, you know, stay tuned to the podcast. Stay tuned to the Facebook page for all of our upcoming events, all of our upcoming giveaways, and, you know, get out there and vote for your favorite submission in the Life Jacket Challenge.
Heck yeah, guys. We need a couple more of those submissions out there. I might even get out there myself and do something crazy. I've kind of been slacking a little bit on the social media thing here. Hopefully I'm not upsetting anyone by staying away from social media. I promise I'll post more soon.
Oh no, you're on social media. We see you on there, and I just want to know, Chris, does it come with the accessories? Guys, we appreciate you listening to the show. Please check us out on Facebook. Check us out on Instagram. Check us out on Spotify, iTunes. Let your friends know about us. Share it with the community. We're here to help everybody. And guys, this is another edition in the books. Adios.
See ya.